This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Buju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikag and Jujuba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There's trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
That the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We're here, we'll stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja. Wakunjahade, Hingadena. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade. I just wanted to start the show out with Wendy. And Wendy, we just want to throw out a big congratulations. You have a big smile.
I have a big smile. The biggest smile in days. For days, I've been chewing my nails and biting my fingernails. And now we have something to smile about because Joe Biden and Kamala Harris got the ticket. And people are dancing in the streets in Philly.
And all over Turtle Island.
That's
so
right.
We just want to give a great congratulations out to Uncle Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, the first African American and woman vice president, Madam Harris, and second Roman Catholic to be elected next to JFK.
I'm so happy and relieved.
Yeah,
honestly, I could just feel like I could breathe.
And now on with the show.
There we go.
Buju, everyone. Miigwech, and thank you for tuning in to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. My name is Ogama Ganu Ikwe. Today is Saturday, November 7th, 2020, and I'm here with some election updates from Turtle Island this week. The question on most people's minds is the outcome of the 2020 U.S. presidential election. Here's a breakdown of what's happening as we know so far and why the answers are taking so long. Currently, Joe Biden has 264 electoral votes. Donald Trump has 214. There are currently five swing states: Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and North Carolina. Trump needs to win Nevada, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and North Carolina to get to the 270 electoral college votes required for victory. Biden needs to win any one of those states to get to 270. It's important to remember that this year, 2020, has been unlike any other year we've seen in American politics. Largely due to the COVID-19 pandemic, there are many more mail-in ballots cast this year than ever before. In addition, the polarity of the candidates this election has also drawn record numbers of voters from all over the country. Mail-in ballots have been reported as flooding in throughout many places in the country. These reasons are primarily what is causing the delay. However, there are other circumstances preventing this from being a quick tally. Here's a swing state-by-state breakdown of what's happening. Georgia has 11 electoral votes at stake. Georgia turned blue on the map when Biden took a narrow lead on Friday morning. The Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, said Friday morning, of approximately 5 million votes cast, we will have a margin of a few thousand. With a margin that small, there will be a recount in Georgia. According to CNN, state official Gabriel Sterling said the state was trying to finish counting on Friday, but warned that counting could slide into the weekend. The state still has at least 13,000 provisional ballots to clear, which includes ballots that have errors that are allowed to be fixed by voters. Of those, there are more than 4,800 provisional ballots in Fulton County, Georgia's largest, which includes Atlanta. Of those 4,800, 3,600 were accepted and 1,200 were rejected. On Thursday, the Associated Press reported that a Georgia judge dismissed a Trump campaign lawsuit that asked to ensure that state laws were followed on storing and counting absentee ballots. In Nevada, there are 6 electoral votes at stake. Since the latest release of 30,322 votes from Clark County, Biden led Trump in Nevada by 22,209 votes as of Friday evening. Biden previously led by a margin of only 11,438 votes. Nevada is one of a handful of states that mailed ballots to all active registered voters. Election officials will count mail-in ballots received through November 10th as long as they were postmarked by Election Day. There is no threshold required to request a recount in Nevada. No recount requests are expected until the Nevada Secretary of State finishes counting mail ballots received on Election Day and those that arrive over the next week, in addition to provisional ballots. According to the Wall Street Journal, the Nevada Supreme Court rejected a last-minute GOP request to alter how Las Vegas area election officials were handling mail-in ballots, but agreed to hear the party's legal challenge in the coming weeks. In Pennsylvania, there are 20 electoral votes. Biden pulled ahead in Pennsylvania after more ballots from Philadelphia were reported on Friday morning. According to CNN, Secretary of State Kathy Buchvar said Friday afternoon that most mail-in ballots had been counted and the state was beginning to process provisional ballots. According to the state's election website, there were approximately 113,000 absentee ballots left to count across the state as of Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, which is just under 5% of mail-in ballots cast in the state. There are about 40,000 ballots still left to be counted in Philadelphia, according to Philadelphia City Commissioner Lisa Dealey. It could take several days to complete the reporting of that, Dealey said. In Allegheny County, which includes Pittsburgh, officials estimate there are about 36,000 ballots left to count. 29,000 of those ballots couldn't be counted until Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time because of a court order. In addition, county officials said that there are approximately 10,000 to 15,000 provisional ballots left. The Trump campaign filed 3 legal challenges to Pennsylvania voting procedures, one of which asked the U.S. Supreme Court for permission to intervene in a pending appeal. Another federal lawsuit filed Thursday by the Trump campaign was resolved when the campaign and Pennsylvania election officials agreed that Democratic and Republican poll watchers would have access to ballot counting operations. In North Carolina, there are 15 electoral votes. Trump leads in North Carolina by more than 75,000 votes, with an estimated 95% of precincts reported. To finish its count, North Carolina is waiting to see if 116,000 outstanding requested absentee ballots are returned by November 12th. In North Carolina, an Election Day postmark ballot can be counted if it is received by 5 p.m. Eastern Time on November 12th. The state still does not know how many of those voters chose to vote in person or to drop off their ballots on Election Day, so the number of potential outstanding votes could decrease, according to CNN. North Carolina State Board of Elections Executive Director Karen Brinson-Bell said Wednesday, with very few exceptions, North Carolina's numbers are not going to move until November 12th or 13th. As a matter of state law, county boards won't meet to review and tally outstanding absentee ballots until November 13th. In Arizona, there are 11 electoral votes. Arizona has an estimated 250,000 to 270,000 uncounted ballots left to count as of 3:45 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, according to Secretary of State Katie Hobbs. Hobbs told CNN's Anderson Cooper that 137,000 of those ballots were in Maricopa County, the state's most populous county. Hobbs also said that there were 25,000 ballots outstanding in Pima County, home to Tucson, and 34,000 in Pinal County, south of Phoenix. As of early this morning, the Associated Press reports that 90% of the state's districts are reporting. It's also important to remember that while it feels like it, this is not the longest election. The presidential election in the year 2000 is the longest in contemporary American history in terms of elapsed time and days. It took 35 days to find out who won the 2000 presidential election. With that, I hope it brings you a sense of peace and patience as we go into the coming weeks. As always, thank you for tuning in to Native Roots Radio Network Presents I'm Awake. My name is Okuma Kanuikwe, and back to you, Wakanchahade.
This portion of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake is brought to you by the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota, working to protect your right to vote and to ensure that every vote counts.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the Chat Now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Hey, we're always so happy to have Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth on. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, Winona.
Greetings. Thanks for having me on. I know I'm from Honor the Earth, but can I be like in a new green revolution, the hemp farmer? I mean, I'm already.
Yeah, exactly. I could spend half our interview time explaining what you do.
No, but you know I like being put in a box, Hey, wow, man, did they quit counting me? Who's got the abacus over there in Pennsylvania? Is there an abacus?
Exactly. Unbelievable. The Native vote was brought out partially because of the great work by your organization and Nancy Bolio up there. 10,000 new registered voters, and they voted 93% at Red Lake, I saw.
Oh, yeah. No, we were, I went for the Buffalo Wild Rice Egg Roll Plan to get Pine Point out and drove around in the elders bus. And we brought a bunch of first-time voters in, kind of escorted them. You had to drive 11 miles to vote up here in this little godforsaken little cabin, just like a little hut built out in the middle of the really white-dominated, Republican-dominated drive. All these Trump signs to get those Indians there. But we got our vote out. I'm proud. We got out our vote up north, and more to come. I think we're just starting to roll out the vote and take some power. And I think when Native people see Native people getting elected, then they feel like, yeah, I should vote, because there's somebody there like that Audrey Thayer. Mm-hmm. I mean, Liz Jackala, Tim Sumner. I mean, up north, Indian people are getting elected. And when you vote, when you run, you got a shot if you're good. And when you vote, you could actually make a change.
Yeah, we got a couple now. Mary Kunish now is a state senator, and then we have a new up and coming. Well, of course, we have Jamie Becker Fenn, but we also have Heather Keeler up there in the Moorhead area, and also her own Deep North issues.
Right. It is the Deep North, which but I'm proud of our vote and, hanging on the end here for Biden, hanging on, but it's looking good. And for all of us, this has been very traumatic.
Yeah.
I was on a call with the governor a couple of days ago talking about the pipeline project that, he's hemming and hawing on, but he was like just talking about, it has been a trauma to any semblance of democracy. And I saw someone from like Columbia commenting, who's the banana republic now?
Exactly. Jeez.
America really needs to step up, and we need to be part of it, because the old America is not what we want. We want the new one that's full of the beautiful people that got elected, really. I was looking at what's her name, Cori Booth, down there in the South, got elected first, African-American woman elected in a town that they hung people,
right,
lynched people 100 years ago for voting, or attempting to vote, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Times are changing. And Native people, a lot of Native people got elected across the board. Would you say three nationally as well?
Yeah, three more, five total that will be in the House of Representatives in the United States. A couple from Oklahoma and And of course, the Shrees Davis and Deb Holland were reelected, part of the squad. So we're really excited about that too.
Yeah, I mean, this is the message that we need. And you know, sadly up north, we still have, you know, some really backwards politics. I mean, Steve Green got reelected. You know, there's a good guy running against him, but a lot of oil money, and you get these candidates that are still pro-nuclear. I was like, when's the last time a nuclear power plant was built, Steve? You know, did you not notice that? You know, so we got to keep pushing so we can get more involved people elected. And, you know, sorry to say, Alan Roy did not win his election, and he's still Secretary Treasurer of the tribe. So maybe one day he'll decide to be one or the other, not try to be both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's probably enough said about that. Maybe we can do another show on him, but geez, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, no, but it's all, you know, I'm really proud of our people and really proud of our vote. And we do want, you know, good things for the future, you know. And so, you know, I'm happy about that. Just relieved as heck, man. You are probably too. It's been a stressful while, right?
We did,
the guy still ain't out, right?
We did a four-hour show on election night, and I'm telling you, we ended at 11. We did a Facebook Live, and it's just like you could see on everybody's face, they were just worn out. I mean, yeah. Especially the people running, but the people, you know, we were thinking hopefully we would get a blue tsunami, and we're all like, oh, geez. But hey, you know, let's switch gears here a little bit here. And, you know, while all this election stuff's going on up in the deep north, we got people walking around with XL shirts. What's going on?
I saw that, man. Okay, so I go to Park Rapids. That's kind of like my town. Mm-hmm. You know, we go in there, and they're pretty good to us. You know, I mean, I go to Fleet Farm, and no one wear masks. And then we see this guy has a Keystone XL shirt on, no mask. Pipeliners are moving in. Mm-hmm. Pipeliners are moving in, and they're moving into the north, and they're coming for these projects that have failed. Mm-hmm. Governor Walz is saying this is jobs for Minnesotans. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm telling you what. They're coming in from Texas. They're coming in from South Dakota. They're coming in from Louisiana and Wyoming. And they are dangerous. And they're man-camping it up. They are man-camping it up. And then, you know, Enbridge released this, like, COVID response strategy, which is wear a mask, stay in social isolation. That works real good until they go into Fleet.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And these communities, like, Aiken County already has, like, no beds left.
Right.
You know, these counties have no beds left. Already,
the whole state. Yeah. We just had 5,400, a record amount yesterday, and 36 deaths. And all the hospitals down here in the cities are full.
Right. You know, and so I'm just telling the governor that shoving a pipeline down our throats during a pandemic is a bad idea. A bad idea because not only do you have 4,200 workers coming into these man camps that are high-risk people. But more than that, you have the water protectors that are going to stand and face them. Now, we're going to mask up, but we don't need any more health threats in our communities, you know?
No,
I can't even think what the governor is. You know that the permits have not been issued, but it looks like Walz is lacking the vision and leadership that we need. You know, people need a job. They don't need a pipeline job.
Mm-hmm.
They need real jobs that are going to last. And, you know, in the end, this proposed project is a whole 23 jobs. You know, we got more than 23 people working at our solar and farming enterprises at White Earth. Come on, Enbridge.
I know. It's well, like I was telling my wife just a couple days ago, last time we talked, I said, well, we all know how to camp and we're going to head up there. And you said, well, we don't have to camp. There's hotels. So we're ready.
Some of those hotels are took up, but get your like good tent. You know, because there's a lot of places. There's, you know, frankly, there's seven sites that they're moving ahead on simultaneously.
Mm.
And some of those are in the, you know, in the dead zone. That's what I would call Thief River Falls. They already, like, you know, it's in the same corridor, but the green zone, you know, that's where their life is. And last night, you know, I'm down here and I'm dreaming about our wetlands, you know, and all of this. But, you know, that water needs life. It doesn't need oil.
Mm.
The water needs life, you know.
Yeah,
so it's like so much water here. So I'm preparing to stand, and I resent that the governor would force a 61-year-old woman to go face a bullet. to protect her water. I resent that.
I appreciate that, too. Say, before we end here, there's been some sad news in Ho-Chunk Nation, and a good friend of yours, Bill Greendeer. Can you speak upon him a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I want to say I was a really good friend of Bill Greendeer's in the years that I knew him, and he inspired a lot of my work, and I was so sad to hear that he had passed on. You know, he inspired a lot of our work on the rights of nature. He was the champion of the rights of nature, you know, always talking to me about, you know, learning from all the animals and you know, worked tirelessly on that as well as he, you know, when I met him, really, I think the first time, he was walking across Wisconsin on the proposed pipeline route in his cowboy boots. And then he had some tennis shoes. So I was like, man, that's one tough Indian. But, you know, up there in the world, you know, there's a good medicine dance for you too, Bill. Good medicine dance, my brother. And I just wanted to really, you know, acknowledge him and say, you know, our heroes pass on and we pray for them in their moving. And we're probably going to, you know, call on his wisdom some days in our prayers, you know?
Wow. We'll end with that. Pini Gigi Winona LaDuke, thank you so much for being on and all the work you do up there in the deep north and all over Turtle Island.
Take care of yourself, man. See you later and keep that abacus going, okay?
Right on. You're listening you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back with Robert Lilligren. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wook Njahade. Wow, each week we reach out to Robert Lilligren of Native American Community Development Institute, NATCI, and just have a nice conversation. Welcome, Robert.
Yeah, bonjour, good morning, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I just want to say, Pini Gigi, thank you for hanging out with us election night when we were on Facebook Live.
Oh, yeah.
We got about 10,000 views, which was fun, but I don't know, when you're on four hours, that's not that big a deal.
10,000 people listening to you is always a big deal. It was a great night. I know your good friend, Governor Tim Pawlenty, was on as well.
Wait, wrong governor.
What did I say? Oh, I'm sorry, Jim Walz. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Quit living in the past.
I guess I just had so much election data thrown at me. My mind is just in a whirl.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So we were able to have a few people on. It was very like our relative Audrey Thayer up in the deep north. She was won, she lost,
Bemidji
she lost,
City
she won.
Council, right. Those numbers were crazy. Yeah, Bemidji City Council member elect, Audrey Thayer. That is just incredible. You know, I had, when I was on with you, I was watching CNN. I had my multiple devices open to multiple sources for voter info, and I had about 15 maybe tabs opened at the Minnesota Secretary of State's office to follow a bunch of races. Yeah. I even had to put together a little index of them so I could quickly jump between them. But Audrey Thayer's was my number one tab that I kept going back to looking for voter information, looking for results.
Wow.
Yeah, she was down, then she was up, then she was down, and then she won.
Yeah.
And you also had Minnesota State Senator elect Mary Krenesh Podine on.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And your new senator elect.
Yeah. Aaron Murphy.
Yeah, Aaron Murphy. So it was a star-studded show. The stars were out.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, I got a quick statement here. You know, one of the things that we talked a little bit about is the 130 candidates that all over Turtle Island. And I know Minnesota, we had Heather Keeler, who's Lakota Dakota win. It's great to have another Native American come down to St. Paul and do some really good voting for us. And but you were talking about 130 candidates, and also we talked about a couple of weeks ago about the seven states that Native American vote turnout we were looking at. And wow, tell our audience a little bit about Michigan and Arizona.
There's this great organizing work going on nationally in Indian country, and organizations like the National Urban Indian Families Coalition in Seattle, Janine Kamenoth, the director there, Native Organizers Alliance, Judith LeBlanc, the the central organizer there. There's the Advanced Native Political Leadership Group that's come together. And under that umbrella, there was what was called the Seven State Strategy, mm-hmm. where there was the data show that in seven states, Minnesota being one of those, there are enough Native votes to swing elections. And so there was concentrated organizing resources dedicated to these races. It's the Advanced Native Political Leadership Group that identified 130 Native candidates nationwide. I'm sure that's an all-time high mm-hmm. record. And then in some communities, these very, very narrow wins for Biden, like Michigan, Arizona, that Native vote is an integral part of the swing. And there's some, what in Maricopa County that we're all watching right yeah. now so closely, there are 110,000 Native voters what? In that county. And so isn't that incredible? And then across Arizona, if you add Tucson, there's 160,000 votes between Maricopa County and Tucson, 160,000 Native votes. And so,
wow.
So I know, and there's this power there that I think we're unaware of. And as you can tell, the broader community is unaware of as well, from CNN's something else category, and, which is famous across Indian Facebook right now.
Yeah.
They couldn't even, they couldn't parse out the Native vote because they hadn't done the work to get this kind of granular data that's completely available. So my guess is in elections in the future, we will see this number broken out.
And we'll see it grow, too, because I think one of the things, when we have a Native candidate run, the next cycle we have more Native candidates run and more, and people are more apt to go out and vote. And I think up in the deep north, we had Red Lake had 93% of voters voting.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, the national, Minnesota usually tops. We're like one or two usually in turnout. It's usually mm-hmm. around 80% mm-hmm. in the state of Minnesota. So to see a nation like Red Lake with 93% turnout, the city of Minneapolis, we're going to end up with something like 81% turnout. Whoa. We're right now cresting the statewide. Usually we're quite a bit below the statewide average. But Minneapolis had a record voter turnout where last I saw, and it was a couple of days ago, we were at 80.9% with more votes coming in. I know. So this is something has changed here, and it's a generational shift, I think. And, I'm old enough to have seen, in 2008, mm-hmm. That was the year that President Obama won his first election. I was Obama delegate to the Democratic National Convention and really saw, and Minnesota was really emblematic of what I call the new electorate, people mm-hmm. that maybe hadn't been engaged. And then each election cycle, they kind of ebb or flow. But this year, the new electorate came out in full force and they should, younger people, people of color, indigenous people, urban people are coming out to vote in their self-interest. And so things are changing fundamentally in the electorate here.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And also, I think getting a Native, let me just say this, change subjects just a second. I think once we have our candidates in, our work is just beginning. And
right.
I think we have some people that, are Democrat and pro-union, which I am, but we also all have to come to the table and go, how can we get green new jobs for our union workers?
Yeah.
And how can we expand our unions? And also,
right.
but get that message out to union workers that we're on your side. We're not trying
right.
to take jobs away.
Right. That coalition building, I think, is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also to elevate those Native issues. And one of the things that just kind of hit me over the head with like a 2x4 since this last election is looking at the makeup of Minnesota's Congressional District 7, a significant shift mm-hmm. in leadership there with Colin Peterson being defeated by Michelle Fischbach.
Oh.
And so I've just been looking at that more, when you think of the rural, it's the most rural, it's the largest in area of the CD's Congressional District here in Minnesota. And so I started to look at it. I actually had to kind of dig a little to understand that four of Minnesota's Native Nations are in CD7.
Wow.
And I have never associated Cullen Peterson with Native interests.
Mm.
You know, you think of Congresswoman Betty McCollum, you know, she's Senator Tina Smith is on Indian Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Jim Oliveskar was a high water mark, at least in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
on Native issues. And it should be CD7, should be where the Native issues are really being raised. And so as we talk about this new political power and being able to demonstrate it, you know, Red Lake is in CD7. If 93% of their people are voting, their congressperson should be paying attention to that.
Right. Exactly. Jeez. Wow. Robert, you know, always great to hear from you. Do you have any closing statements? You know, I don't know, whenever I think of voting, I always think of the old Chicago term like we grew up to. It's like vote early and vote often. but do you have any words of wisdom before we end your great segment?
You know, I don't think I'm that wise. Thank you for your kind words. I would say be patient, do the count, and be engaged beyond it. And our election process is sound and has integrity. And most people who are in elected office who are questioning the integrity of our elections are commenting on their own authenticity in office. So our elections are working, and we need to stay engaged beyond this election. So thanks for having me, Robert. Chinigwech, it's always a pleasure.
Pinigi, that was Robert Lilligren and Native American Community Development Institute, NADCI. And you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Each week we have a great update from House Representative Mary Kunish Podine. Let's take a listen.
Aho, matakeyape. It's Senate-elect Mary Kunish Podine on this beautiful evening of November 6th. I cannot believe how beautiful this weather is. If it's one good thing that has happened in November, it's this weather. Well, I'm excited to announce that I was successful in my bid and my campaign for the Minnesota Senate, and that makes me the first Indigenous woman to hold a Senate seat in Minnesota, which is both fabulous and kind of a sad realization. But there it is, and I'm really super excited and ready to go, looking out for the good folks of Minnesota as well as our Indigenous folks, that's for sure. I was very disappointed that Alan Roy didn't make it to join me in the Senate, but I'm hoping that he will gear up and come back in 2 years, because we'll hold a spot for him, that's for sure. Very excited that Heather Keeler and Jamie Becker Finn won in the House, build up that Native American caucus over there. And then congratulations to Audrey Thayer and Liz Jokala in Bemidji and Cloquet, and Tim Sumner, who was reelected to his commissioner spot back up in District 4. So that is just absolutely fabulous. I know that there are so many people that worked so hard to get the Native vote out, and it's starting to show across the nation. I think the Native vote was record turnout in almost all the states, especially in those key states. I know that there were many people that worked so hard on the GOTV Get Out the Vote, and it shows, because more first-time voters and elders than ever before not only registered, but actually did vote. And I think I've read a number of articles about the Navajo and the Hopi, how they have gotten extraordinary numbers out there. Pine Ridge Reservation had 90% turnout for Biden, which is just incredible. Ogallala Lakota County in South Dakota, 89% for Biden. And then, if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard or read 92% voter turnout up in Red Lake. That's incredible. It shows just how powerful our vote is and how much we can influence the trajectory of our communities and our state and our nation. And so I hope this is a trend that does not reverse, and would encourage those of you that are thinking about running or participating in campaigns to think long and hard, because we certainly need all the folks that we can. You know, it was just back in 1964 that Natives got the right to vote. And again, I hate to say these things, the right to vote. It should be everybody's right to vote, no matter what. But Native folks weren't allowed to vote until 1964, but they didn't even have citizenship in this state until 1924. And a lot of that was around conniving to get lands, you know, transfer of lands. If you sign this paper and transfer your lands, we'll let you vote. We'll give you the voting rights. And that certainly was the way that it went for so long. And we've got to make sure that never happens ever again. So the elections are happening. We're waiting to hear the report for the final decisions on our presidential campaign. Biden is so close to it. It would be great if Trump just conceded, but I have a feeling that's not going to happen. So, you know, in Minnesota here, we knew how slim the margins were in 2016 for pro-Trumpers and others. And, those campaign visits that Trump had here going back to 2019 made it really clear that he had Minnesota in his eyes and was ready to come back and wanted to triumph here in Minnesota. He lost 2016 election by less than 50,000 votes. And we know with all the visits that he's had, he really intended to make sure that he had this in his pocket, and that did not turn out. Minnesotans organized and turned out in near record numbers, just under 80%. So the general population, just under 80% got out and voted. And that was really huge. I mean, that is democracy in action. So thank you all, and bravo to you if you helped somebody get out to the polls. We know that in the end, this presidential election is going to be decided by the will of the people, by the votes. We're not going to let anybody snatch it out of our hands and have four more years of the kind of behavior that we've had. Women, our black folks, our brown folks, our indigenous folks, our immigrants, our working class, our young voters voted and delivered the Biden win here in Minnesota. And I do have to say that Hennepin County actually delivered that win. We've got a tight population down here. And so thank you to Hennepin County, but thank you across the state. If you look at the state, it's pretty red, except in the big metro areas. And so let's find a way to bring everybody together, because we really are going to need a statewide strategy going out in the future. So we're facing a long-term crisis from this pandemic, and we know that systematic racism and unemployment is going to play a big part of our recovery. So I'm hoping that we can get together with this new House and Senate and focus on solutions. We really do have to focus on COVID relief and those sort of things. I want to see Minnesota continue pushing forward and come together to focus on solutions and put the healing, let the healing begin. One of the things that we still haven't completed here in Minnesota is our elections. In the Minnesota House of Representatives, it was interesting because there were a number of campaigns that came out very, very close at the end. And in fact, there were a few folks that I knew that were running. And when I went to bed in the wee hours, election night, it looked like they had lost, only to wake up and all those early votes and those had been tabulated and flipped that whole campaign around so that our DFLer won that position, and that happened in a couple of different places. And there's a few here in the Senate that we're watching. The Democrats still have the majority in the House, and right now there is a one Senate majority for the Republicans in the Senate. But there are a couple races that are super careful. All of those votes from early voting have not come in, so we'll have to wait and see. Minnesota was the only split legislature, and that means that the Dems had the majority in the House and the Republicans had the majority in the Senate, and we had a Democrat governor. We have to work together across all of those and get agreement. And when the parties are not favorable, that makes it really difficult to get anything done. And we saw that in our bonding bill, how long it took us to get that bonding bill done this year. But we did it, and it looks just great, really great. What else is going on in the state government? Well, our Governor Walz has been busy pumping out more executive orders. He shared Executive Order 2094, and that had to do specifically with education. Right now, I know our families are struggling in so many ways. The students, the parents, the teachers, it's just been really, really difficult as we try to figure this out and make sure that all of our students have the resources and the support that they need. And so Governor Walz created this Safe Learning Plan, and it's meant to support our students and our families and our educators as we continue to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. We know the numbers are higher than ever. We were warned. Everybody knew this was happening. Plenty of people didn't pay attention across the state, and now we have the highest ever daily new cases as well as deaths. So in this executive order, 2094, he wanted to make sure that especially the kids that are struggling the most. And so this executive order is strongly discouraging schools from requiring teachers to provide both live instruction in person and remotely to students at the very same time. That's like one person doing two jobs, and teachers already do more than a full-time job. And so he's requiring schools to give teachers an extra 30 minutes of planning time each day. That's huge to prepare for distance learning. And it also gives the district the ability to cancel classes for as many as 5 days in order to prepare for a change in instruction modes caused by the rise or fall in coronavirus. This executive order for education really does look to address mental health and telehealth resources and services. The pandemic is making what already was high incidences of mental health even worse. And so he wants to make sure that our kids are getting those in-person services, and especially kids with IEPs, individualized education programs. Wants to make sure that schools are looking at how we can provide intensive service during this distance learning period. And there's lots in this executive order. If you just Google executive order Governor Walz, you'll be able to see all of the executive orders that he has put out there. We will be going back to the legislature this November to once again give him those executive order powers so that he can continue working on this and give us the support that we need at a moment's notice. And so that's about it for me. As I mentioned, we are in the highest ever incidences, daily incidences of new COVID cases as well as deaths. And so I beg of you that you keep your face covered when you're around other people. Wash your hands. Stay out of large groups when you're not feeling well. Stay home and get tested. please don't expose the children, the elders, our community to this virus, or we'll never get past it. And unfortunately, that means more deaths in our community. So be good to each other. Enjoy this last weekend of beautiful weather. Winter is going to rear its ugly head once again. And that means we have to close our windows and close our doors and get ready for the winter. So take care, everybody. Thanks for all the good work that everybody's done this election period. Wopulatanka.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up, stand
up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, couldn't cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
This portion of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake is brought to you by the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota, working to protect your right to vote and to ensure that every vote counts. Welcome back to Hour 2 of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. This show is dedicated to those who give back and fight back for our people. We are the resistance. We are awake. Hey, I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy Pilot. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years, and she is a state council member for the Humane Society of the United States, and she works on animal issues at the state level. Wendy, also, this is one of the popular segments where we talk about our sacred animals and what how we can protect them and live one and one. All things are relatives. What we do to everything we do to ourselves, all is one black elk. Wendy, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Hanajihihani, and that means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. So thank you, as always, Curtis. I love that black elk saying. It really resonates with me. I'm going to be talking about wolves again, because wolves are in the forefront right now as far as animals that need to be protected. And Robert, you sent me this article, and I have an update about it. And this is another voting race that was razor thin. So in Colorado, what they want to do is they want to reintroduce the gray wolves to Colorado, because they've been extinct in the state since 1940.
Jeez.
Right? So they want to introduce it. And for the first time ever, they wanted the public to vote whether they should be doing this or not. And usually what happens is biologists decide and make the decisions on their own. But they let the public vote on this, and it was very, very controversial, of course, as you can imagine. But the proposition squeaked by with a 50.4% lead, right? So again, this just shows that every single vote counts. If you think that you're going to sit back and your vote doesn't matter, it does. And here we go. Coloradans have voted to reintroduce wolves, which were hunted and trapped to extinction in the 1940s. And they're going to be reintroduced slowly to the state by 2023. So we know nothing happens overnight. So this is the first time American voters, like I said, have ever weighed in on the reintroduction of wildlife species, as that decision is usually left up to the state's team of wildlife biologists. Gray wolves once roamed across two-thirds of the continental U.S. Without wolves at the top of the food chain, the whole ecosystem is out of balance, says Eric Washburn, a campaign manager at the Rocky Mountain Wolf Action Plan, the advocacy group behind the proposition. Yellowstone, and we've talked about this on the show also, Robert, right? Yellowstone National Park reintroduced gray wolves to the park in 1995, and Washburn looks into it as a living laboratory and model for Colorado's reintroduction plans. The return of the region's apex predators set off a cascade of natural events and ultimately restored Yellowstone's ecological integrity, says Washburn, right? And the reintroduction has hailed as one of the world's greatest rewilding stories.
Yeah.
Right? We had that story. Yellowstone National Park was decimated by these big elk and deer. They were eating all the vegetation.
Right.
And it was dark and bleak because there was no predators eating those animals. And they were taking over. So they reintroduced the wolves. They cut down on the herd. The Yellowstone National Park flourished. And there's a great, if anybody wants to watch a beautiful video, it's called How Wolves Changed Rivers.
I think that's right.
I think that's the name of it, How Wolves Changed Rivers. But you could just Google it and watch it. It's just beautiful. It's a wonderful story. Wolves were first listed as endangered 45 years ago when the population dropped to 1,000 individuals in the continental 48 states. Now it sits about 6,000. Colorado's decision is complicated by the fact that last week the Trump administration delisted the gray wolves from the U.S. Endangered Species Act, ESA, after announcing the species recovery. So Trump
successful recovery.
Thank you. So Trump decided that there was a successful recovery. But the problem is that the Trump administration took the wolves off the Endangered Species Act because the ranchers said that they would vote for him. So he would get all the votes from the ranchers because he knew that the people who cared about the environment, the people who cared about the wolves were going to vote for Biden, right?
Yeah.
So this is why he did this. So anyway, I'm so excited now, right?
Yeah, you are. You were really crashing election night.
Our wolves are going to be saved. Thank you. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, and one of the things we talk about how they reintroduced the wolves and how the vegetation came back and how the river changed and all these things that we know as Native Americans that we all are part of the circle.
That's right. That's right. And honestly, definitely watch that video. And it's narrated by this English man with an English accent. And it's just beautiful. So the states will now decide if wolves can be hunted or trapped. And since wildlife cannot recognize state lines, right? A wolf can't decide whether he's going to be in Colorado or in Wyoming, right? So if a Colorado wolf is protected in Colorado and walks over the Wyoming state line, He could get killed because, you know, they don't know state lines, wolves. So we really have to be careful. And that's what happens a lot, that the wolves, if they're protected in one state, will roam to the next state and be trapped and hunted there. But it looks like there's going to be 17 million acres of public land in western Colorado that's going to be protecting these wolves. I can't even wrap my head around how big 17 million acres are. I need to know football fields. Like how many football fields is that?
What is it, 5,000?
I don't know.
5,000 square feet is a mile. I better not say that.
I have no idea. But anyway, it's a big lot Google of land, it. Right? Well, I should have Googled that and seen what that is.
To end with this, Wendy, one of the things I do want to say is...
Learn how to say successful.
That's the second thing, and aluminum. But hey,
boiler. I have a problem saying that, too.
Hey, one of the things I want to say is that our work is just beginning.
Yes, absolutely. And the work is just beginning. Thank you for saying that.
And there's a lot to do and a lot of time, and we got to just keep talking about our sacred animals and keep them in the circle. And I really appreciate all you bring up and... go ahead.
I just want to say one more thing before my time is up. But, you know, the Trump administration has decimated so many wildlife refuges. The Tungrass refuge in Alaska, he wants to just dig for oil, right? And hopefully now that the administration will be changed, we'll be saving our environment, we'll be saving our water, we'll be saving our animals. And I just feel so relieved, and I feel like excited about working on this stuff again, because I think for the past 4 years I just felt defeated, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. And now we have to push the moderate Democrats into more of a progressive thinking.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be our work. Mm-hmm. And also in 2 years there's another election.
Yes.
So there's our work too. Mm-hmm. Pini Gigi, again, Wendy, thank you so much for bringing up our sacred animals with wings, hooves, tails, and big noses. And really, Pini Gigi, thank you so much. And fans.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Hey, each week we check in up in there in the deep north with Nancy Bolio of Bemidji 350, also a leader of Action, or of Rise, excuse me, and also co-host on Tuesdays of a soon-to-be re-changed and rebranded Rock the Vote Native Style. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, thanks for having me, Robert, and it's feeling like a little sense of relief, and even though we're still on edge about, you know, the voting results, but, you know, I must admit that the turnout in northern Minnesota for voter registration and voting at the polls was just way out there. And, you know, what we learned from this experience is that we do have that power, Robert. And so I'm really excited that here on a local note, Audrey Thayer for city council won her election. And then we have Helen Keeler out of Moorhead. And
that's Heather,
you know, there's
Heather
others,
Keeler.
Yeah, Heather Keeler, excuse me. And then we have Liz Jocula out of Cloquet. And, you know, just to mention a few names, is that we made that happen. And first and foremost, they made that happen by finding courage and deciding to be our voice at the table. And so I'm really honored to have worked with you and worked with other, you know, the programs that help make this work possible, because, you know, I would have never met these great people. I don't think I'd ever be a part of this momentum in time where we're building that power and recognizing we are the power, Robert. We just have to, you know, understand how the political system works, even though it's not a part of our culture. This is the world we live in. This is the world that's been imposed on us. So if we're going to make change, you know, we see a lot of people getting angry, like when George Floyd, you know, got murdered. When we get that angry, we tend to be more reactive than proactive. And I think, you know, through the voting process and civic engagement, we can find change. But we must take that anger and not be so reactive. And it's okay to be, you know, reactive. And it's, you know, that's a valid feeling to be angry. I mean, we all feel that. But at the same time, we have to understand we have to take that energy and spend it in a different way if we're going to look for long-term change. And I think, you know, voting has shown how angry people were. And that was a good way to spend it, show up at the polls and take a vote for change. And, you know, as we know, not everyone's, you know, a Biden fan, but, you know, we know we're not Trump fans at all. And we see, you know, the administration in the last 4 years has done nothing for the people and the hate rhetoric, but we showed up, Robert, and I'm proud of that. And I'm proud that all of our relatives that showed up and vote said it does matter. A vote does matter. 2022, 2024, and way beyond, there is so much work to do. And I think that starts with voter education, because a lot of people weren't aware of the primaries, you know, and how important those were. That's the first vote. And then you go into the general election in November. And if we work a lot harder to get out to our communities earlier, so much earlier, Robert, and door knock and have those conversations, show up in meetings and say, you know what, we are that power. And let's keep building on what we got. So when we see people, you know, our relatives winning their seats, even if they didn't lose their, or win their, you know, election, mm-hmm. they're not going to quit, Robert. They're going to continue to be a voice for their communities, and they planted their seed. And, you know, if we just keep holding on onto that momentum of we're still here and we are the power, we can just see so much more of our native wave coming through. You know, people are talking about the blue wave, and mm-hmm. me in the back of my mind, I'm talking native wave here, you know, because we are instrumental to policy and change if we make it happen, if we allow ourselves to do that. And so in this modern world, if we're not at the table, we are what's being served. And so, you know, people are, well, the voting's done, and no, let's not go back home.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look forward and, you know, make that change happen. So today there's going to be marches out there, actually. Together We Rise is going to be in the Minneapolis area, and it's going to be at the old Third Precinct, and I think it starts at noon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a collective power, because we can't believe in the system anymore. Or we don't, I should say, don't believe in the system anymore. And what are we going to do to decide what our future looks like? And that means civic engagement, showing up to these marches and standing in solidarity and holding these politicians' feet to the fire. So, Robert, looking forward, I feel excited, because there are Native relatives that have paved that way and given us a place at the table and a path to follow. And so I'm excited for what the future brings us.
Well, I'm excited for all the work that you did up there and all the acknowledgement that you and your crew have gotten for the 9,000 plus newly registered Native Americans. I know we wouldn't be talking about Michigan or Arizona if it wasn't for Michigan had 110,000 Native American votes this time around. Arizona had 160,000. And that's flipping the country right now. And that's, I wrote down Native Wave. That's going to be my next T-shirt.
Yes, Robert. And, you know, that is exciting to know that. And, you know, that's what we've been working so hard in the last, you know, half a year here, is to telling people how important our voices at the polls, and we just got to show up. And, you know, the system might have failed us in the past, and we've seen what it's done, and we know what to do better. And I think because we're learning how to play this political game, we're getting good at it. And you know what? I think we're going to get better at it, Robin, as long as we show up and use that collective power that we hold together. And honestly, I'm feeling so good, Robert. And just the last 2 days after, you know, election day, November 3rd, I was wiped out, and I'm at the point today where my fire's lit again, and I'm ready to go. So I'm looking forward to having conversation here on a local level with some of our elected officials on the city council and the Beltrami County board, the commissioners, and then some of our tribal leaders from all the three tribes surrounding Bemidji area. And, you know, that's our next step here on a local matter, you know, because change does take place locally. So I'm encouraging our listeners out there today, you know, after these new officials get sworn in, we see a few new faces, or even if you want to do it now, start attending city council meetings and your board commissioner meetings, because, you know, locally that's where decisions are made, and we have to remind them that we're still here too. And if we can just get that Native wave going across county to county after the election, there's going to be some good progress. And you know what? Our words will no longer fall on deaf ears, and that's up to us to make the noise and the good trouble, Robert.
Wow, we'll leave it at that. Pini Gigi, Nancy Bolio, Bemidji 350, and Rise, and co-host of Tuesday's Rock the Nation Native Style. Hey, we'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the Chat Now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I Am Awake. I'm your host, Wakunja Hade, and that's Distant Thunder, and my taxpayer name is Robert Pilot. Hey, we love checking in with Red Dawn Foster, South Dakota State elect senator, and thank you so much for stopping in, and congratulations.
Thank you. It's definitely been an exciting time, so I appreciate being on.
Yeah, and we appreciate you in all. I follow you on Facebook, and you have a lot of great words. Before we talk a little bit about your being reelected and the things that you'd love to talk about, I just came up that Biden won.
Yes, Biden won. They've made it official. And you'll see, looking at the electoral votes in the states that were have switched, that the Native vote made a huge impact. And that's credited to not only candidates that are running, they're bringing the awareness of getting out the vote, but also the grassroots organizing that happened on the ground. There was significant work that was happening in all the states that had huge Native turnouts, Arizona being, you know, one case in point. So It is amazing.
And Michigan, I heard with earlier guests that over 110,000 Native Americans voted in Michigan.
Yes, that it is amazing to see just how, as Natives become informed, engaged, how we're shaping the nation.
Yes, definitely. Talk a little bit about your process and what you went through and all the people I know you support around Turtle Island. Speak your truth, please.
So, yes, Dakota, it's been an amazing race. Just campaigning a pandemic was something that, of course, none of us had ever experienced before, and was quite different than anything we'd have experienced before. So I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I wasn't sure how our turnout was going to be. We had just come off a 7-day quarantine lockdown because our COVID numbers were rising. So we knew that could potentially really impact our voter turnout. And so we weren't really sure. And so that night when I went to bed about 11 o'clock, I was down by 1,000 votes. And
wow.
You know, yes.
And wow.
So, and but Ogallala Lakota County hadn't been counted yet. And again, because of the pandemic, I didn't know what to expect. We knew that there was, you know, we had put a lot of work into the ground, and there was a much bigger youth vote engagement and turnout than we'd ever seen before. And so then I woke up about 2 o'clock in the morning to see that I had not only won, but I had won by over 1,000 votes, increasing my voter turnout and votes from the previous election. So,
wow.
You know, it was good. It really is. The Native vote made the difference. And so people who think that their voice doesn't, you know, their vote doesn't count and their voice doesn't matter, it's raised elections. It determines elections. So that's been really great. Another big thing that we've accomplished in South Dakota is both medical and rec cannabis has been legalized. Mm-hmm. So I think that tribes are uniquely positioned to capitalize off it, not just economically, but also what does this mean for decriminalization? Because
right. We
are disproportionately charged with marijuana-related crimes. And so that's also going to be a focus of ours. I'm happy to say that the five Native legislators that are in the state have all been reelected, so we will be returning to Senate.
Wow.
So Troy Heinert will be returning to the Senate with me, as well as the other Native candidates to the House.
That's so
However,
cool.
Yes, but we did lose Democrat voters, so there's actually going to be only three Democrats in the Senate this next 2 years, and so that's going to be difficult.
Yeah. Well, we definitely love reaching out to you and supporting you and all your actions. And we want to keep plugged in with you and what's happening in South Dakota and support you. And I know it's going to be rough, but we have another cycle in 2 years and we need another Native wave.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing to see Heather Keeler in Minneapolis and Christina Hasselwood in Kansas. Just, you know, these two young women, just the work that they put in, and now that their legislators, so just to see the work that they're going to do and how we can support each other collectively. But like you said, we can celebrate this win, but 2 years comes around really quick, so our work doesn't stop. We have to continue to stay informed, engage, register voters, and just get out there and be heard.
Exactly. I was talking to an earlier guest, and I said, well, we got to take a month off and really jump back into this. And he said, a month? We're taking a few days off, and we're getting ready. And I went, oh, okay, cool. I just wanted to – I didn't want to burn anybody out, but, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, we're actually launching a campaign here, and we'd like it to start in South Dakota and then grow across Indian country. We're starting with the little kids of Know Your Native Legislator. We want every child from kindergarten all the way through high school to know that they have Native legislators, senators, and House reps, and that they see that we're, you know, the laws that we're bringing, and so that they can identify with who's in leadership and know that that's, one, that their voice matters when they get to their age, and two, that they can also run.
Wow, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. I hope we can support that in any way. I want to be able to support that in any way that you see fit. That's awesome news.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So, you know, we had, I guess, 130 candidates across Turtle Island run. I'm not sure how they ended up. I got to do a lot more research because that's a lot of people in different states. But that's just amazing, and I hope we can double that every 2 years.
Yeah, I believe that Native legislators, Native candidates are the fastest growing demographic to actually run, and we're also one of the youngest. So, I mean, it's amazing to see, just like you said, that blue wave changing and shaping our futures.
Exactly. Any last words before we let you go? Because I know you're super busy and you have a lot going on there. And we really appreciate all you do here in the Twin Cities and everyone that listens to this show all over Turtle Island.
So I just want to say thank you for the work that you do and making sure that our voices are heard and amplified. And I want to thank every Native that got out to vote. Even if you weren't able to get out to vote, maybe telling your family members and others to vote. So I want to thank them for, you know, just getting out there in pandemic times and making sure that their Native candidates were supported and say, look at what we can do. I'm the result of over 3,000 Ogallalas going to the polls. So thank you.
Wow. Pini Gigi, that was Red Dawn Foster, South Dakota State Senator. Pini Gigi for being on Red Dawn. And you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And this is, we're running down the show here, and this is my favorite part of the show, where I talk to my Daga, Uncle Curtis. Welcome, and tell us your name, Uncle Curtis.
Ho, Pini Gigi Chushke. My name is Moshke Hunterjinga. I represent the Eagle Clan. My colonized taxpayer's name is Curtis West. I always got to say hello to my beautiful wife, Kim, baby girl. So, ho to her. And I always like to scream out to family, relatives, and friends in Four Directions. We pray all is well. Just remember to mask up, social distance, and wash your hands, you know. And I'm praying for our firefighters out there in the four different states that are still battling that fire. And like I said, my Chushke here lets me do some birthdays, some shout-outs. He's going to help me with some events. So I'm going to start off with some birthdays. And there's a good friend of ours from the Twin Cities here. Her name is Doreen Day. We want to say happy birthday to her. And another one of our relatives and friends from here in Twin Cities, Darlis Bell Grass. She was on our a committee over at the area office and stuff like that. So, anyway, happy birthday to them. And then our cousin slash brother over in Wisconsin, I want to say happy birthday to that Marine veteran, Matthew McKee. I want to say happy birthday to them guys. Uh-huh. And then we got a relative down there in Iowa, too, that I can't tell you her age because you get mad at me about that. But her name is Cadence Lathridge, and it's my sister slash cousin daughter. So I want to say happy birthday out there. And then there's a guy that's another veteran. He's a legend, a high school football legend. So we want to happy birthday to him. They call him Lenny the Legend Sanchez. And he's listening every week, and he likes Robert Pilot's voice. And he said he's got a great voice for radio, he says. So,
and face.
So we're going to go and face for radio, he says. Man, he's a real handsome devil. And anyway, we're going to have to say this again, too, you know, how sacred our elders are to us, you know. This pandemic going on, we'd like you to check in on your elders, you know, make sure they, if they need anything, get it to them. You know, you can call them with that social distance. Call them, see if they need anything delivered to them. Please do that. So we're going to start off with some elder birthdays. I'm going to start off this one that's a fan favorite of Native Roots Radio. So I'm going to say happy birthday to Rosetta Hunt right off the get with her leadoff batter there.
Right on.
Happy birthday, Rosetta. And another elder we want to say happy birthday to is Earl Topping, Rose Adams, Stanley Blackdeer, Barb Goodbear, Byron Lone Tree. So we want to say happy birthday to the elders. Look out after your elders. And we're going to do some shout-outs here right now, too. First of all, I'm biased on this one. Me and Kim's two of our twin grandsons made the Team Minnesota, the seventh-grade elite football team. And wow. They're going to travel down to Kansas City, Missouri on December 5th. So, I want to say congrats to them, too. And one's a quarterback and one's a lineman. So, but they made the team. They picked 30 elite football players from not just the Twin Cities, but all across the state of Minnesota. So,
wow,
good luck down there in Kansas City. So, but then another shout-out. Well, I always got to say this one, and Tuske agrees with me. I've got to give a shout-out to American Indian Movement, Clyde Frank, Lisa, and all the crew for AIM. So, we want to say that much on that. You know, we want to say again, I want to say thank you to the Ho-Chunk Nation for, you know, with this this money that's coming in. I know times are tough right now, but that money that they're sending to us, man, is very, very helpful, and we're grateful for that, you know. And here's one, a friend of ours and a friend of my brother, Mark, and her husband's a good friend of me and Kim's. And so I want to say happy birthday to Gina Adams Rackner. You know, it's her birthday today, so... That thing I want to say, too, is the other shout-out I'm going to do is that, like I was saying earlier about my grandson's football team, they're having a fundraiser for raffle tickets for cash prizes. And you can contact my daughter, Jade Love, on Facebook and for all the information on that. And I want to say Pinagigi to all of the voters out there, too, that making this thing happen what we wanted to. So I want to say Pinagigi for that native vote out there, you know, and I want to say a couple more things. I'm going to say congratulations to Tim Sumner, Red Laker. He made he reelected for Bemidji City Council.
Mm-hmm.
And another Wangsheka Native woman, her name is Audrey Thayer. She got elected up there, too. So I was really happy for them peoples. And other thing I wanted to bring up, too, Trishke, before we get into events, is, you know, I wanted to say that record-breaking, congrats to them, record-breaking six Native candidates that were elected to Congress on Tuesday.
Wow. You know, amazing.
So, yeah, and the other thing that was never happened before, over in the Northern Cheyenne Nation has elected all women for the first time ever as tribal president, vice president, and all five open seats on tribal council. Said this has never happened before, you know. And the other thing I want to say, shout out too, about that native vote. Up there in Red Lake, they flooded the polling booths, and 92.8% of the Red Lakers voted in Biden's favor up there. And so we really like that for them. And the other thing we wanted to say before getting events, you know, we're asking for all you prayer warriors out there. We got a relative, a real sweet, sweet relative of ours, Winnebago, Nebraska. She sang at my nanny, my mother's funeral, real beautiful song. And, we asked for prayers for Sarah Snake LaPointe down there. She's dealing with cancer, and it's going to be a tough battle for her. So just keep her in mind for your prayers and stuff like that. And then I'm going to start out with some events, and Chushka is going to help me with these. And so this is one, you're going to have to look it up online, but on this Monday, November 9th at 12 p.m., it's called Lunch and Learn, Why Indigenous Representation Matters. It's an online event, you know, so I wanted to say that much on there, too. And the other event that I got before Chushka is going to come and help me out, the District 4 area meeting this Thursday, November 12th, it's not going to be in person. You're going to have to contact them. It's going to be a virtual meeting. And the other thing I want to say before we get into this, another one of the events coming up too, you know, I want you to get make sure that you sign Robert Chushka Pilot's his paper for he's running for a D4 legislator. So really nice of you to keep Robert in mind and sign that up. And if you can contact Robert or his official campaign manager, me, if you need any information on that. But
exactly.
Yeah, so we wanted to say another shout out to Jerry Auganash. We want to say anything for all this information. You know, he's Native Roots Radio. So anything he gets the noise on for Red Lake Nation. He's Minneapolis and Twin City Red Lakers. And so anytime I get any news from him, I got to say, Pinagigi, thank you, Miigwech, to the rabbit, Jerry Auganash. So, and Chushka, you got any help with me in the events? I really appreciate it.
Hey, yeah. I want to wish Joe Biden congratulations. It just came up that he has 284 electoral votes. And congratulate him. And I also want to just give a shout-out to Bill Greendeer, and I don't know if you were going to talk about Bill, but he just passed, and he's an elder of Ho-Chunk Nation, and I know a lot of people that are water protectors and all over Turtle Island are going to miss Bill. And also, I just want to say we do a Tuesday show, Rock the Vote Native Style. It's going to be changed to Rock the Treaties Native Style on Tuesdays at 2 on AM 950 and Facebook, and also Pilots Progressive Party. And that's on Wednesday. And of course, we do the symposium, Native Symposium, this week. We're all going to be celebrating all the Native victories across Turtle Island, and especially here in Minnesota. That's 7:30 on Sundays. And wow, I'm just this just came up, Uncle Curtis. So Pinigigi.
Aho, aho.
Do you have a gaga or a?
I got some wisdom that kind of hit the spot today, you know, and. And it says, success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts.
Good one.
I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenicoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests which make this show. If you are listening to this show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.